Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you struggling with loss? Are you willing to challenge everything you've been taught about life and death? Beyond Proof Radio is a space that explores beyond current self-limiting beliefs surrounding loss, offering radical healing, which will come from the least likely of places. Join Angie on her experiential journey, which includes metaphysics, science, and spirituality, proving that the body is merely a shell of our soul. It is possible to create an amazing life from the depths of pain. It's your life. It's your choice. Now, here's your host.
Hi, my beautiful, beautiful listeners. Welcome. And I hope that your families are healthy and continue to be safe. I want to start this program with the creative process. And most of you know that one of the quotes that I absolutely love is, in order to connect with your loved one, your need to connect with them must be greater than your need to please others or seek approval. My guest, Jacob Nordby, today, author, and we'll get into that exactly what he does and why he's here, has a wonderful quote as well. When you no longer need approval from others, like the air you breathe, the possibilities in life are endless. What an interesting little prison we build from the invisible bricks of other people's opinions. That from Jacob Nordby. Do you feel like you don't fit in anywhere, that you've spent your entire life trying so damn hard to fit in, not to create waves, to make sure everyone likes you, making everyone happy at the expense of your own soul, your joy, your happiness? Are you one of the hundreds that have reached out to me every day to share your amazing experiences of what you are creating for yourselves about death and life after death, a subject so taboo, it makes even the toughest run for cover? And you preface, you guys, your miraculous stories with, shh, Angie, don't tell anyone, only to question yourself, am I weird? Am I hallucinating? Do I have mental illness? Am I grasping because I'm in so much grief? You feel peace, yet you doubt your irrational and most of the time unexplained experiences. And if you answered yes to any of these questions, this show is for you. You are not alone. Death has the ability to transform our lives if we allow. And so many ask, what is my purpose? Why am I here? While only you will be able to know this, my guest today is here to help you to start opening your creative mind, to start uncovering your hidden genius, something we all have. And unfortunately, if you are here, it is because you or someone you know has lost someone so significantly. And what I have found personally, that it has been in the depths of pain and trauma where we are brought to our knees. And yet when we realize we have come, and where we have come has been the most amazing and magical miracle that can happen. It's using our grief for something creative. And in the process of honoring ourselves, we find a passion that's deep in our soul, pulling us, which is greater than the need to remain in continuous pain and suffering. When my son took his life at the age of 20, and 1 year later after my husband took his, a week after our wedding, I found myself searching, where are they? What happens when we die? It has led me down the path of the most wonderful wonderment and discovery and awakening that now I can call a gift, because I wouldn't have achieved this level of joy had it not been through the depths of pain and loss of the boys that I absolutely treasured. And always a skeptic, finding myself trying to rationalize the irrational, things were coming at me so quickly And I wanted to share with you all today that this hasn't been an easy journey to be creative and to come out of the womb of an analytical, skeptical, put down, not good enough, to be talking about a subject that's so taboo. And I kept finding that although I was feeling this tremendous amount of joy that I wanted to share with everyone, and in me, my just in between my pain, suffering, and in my humanness, there was one word that kept creeping into my vernacular, and that word was weird. Weird. I'm weird. And it was a trigger for me because it put me back in that 10-year-old child. And then when going to college, you should do this, you should do this. I was fitting into everybody else's play, their script. That's when I found Jacob Nordby. Jacob Nordby is a well-known author. Blessed Are the Weird, A Manifesto for Creatives, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening, and his third book due out at the beginning of next year called The Creative Cure, How Finding and Freeing Your Inner Artist Can Heal Your Life. Please help me give a warm welcome to my beautiful, talented, authentic, and creative coach guest, Jacob Nordby in the house. Woo woo! Hey, Jacob.
I feel welcome. Thank you.
You are welcome. Well, listen, I want you to first share who are you and what was the catalyst that brought you to this creative space that you're in right now?
Well, I'd love to share that. And before I do, Angie, I just really want to honor the story you told in the introduction about yourself, how deeply personal that is, and how you're connecting with people who are seeking to connect beyond, you know, seeking for answers, seeking for connection with people they love. And I just have such a heart for all of that. And, I grew up in a very rigid fundamentalist background, and I was a people pleaser and wasn't really looking to cause ripples or rebel, but I kept having experiences as a kid where I would have, I guess what I would call now a mystical experience that didn't fit into the faith that I was raised in. And I would go looking for answers. I would go talk to the authorities, the preachers and teachers, and none of them had answers for me. And that was just one experience. I was also very, very sensitive among a group of friends who didn't seem to be so much. And so I just began to develop the sense that I was a weird kid, and maybe wouldn't find a way to fit in exactly. Experienced, some rejection, and it was a pretty small society. So it wasn't like, rejection, bullying that we hear about that so many people experience. But in my case, it was severe enough, to definitely cause my inner self to just sort of go into hiding. So those were some of the early years.
And Jacob, I know, and I'm going to talk to you, or I'm going to ask you something very personal, because it took me a while to find this. And we're similar beings, which I just believe in everything that I've read that you're writing, and the joy that you are providing others as well, is our vibe is our tribe. Mm-hmm. And in order to find out who I am, the I am that I am, I had to be willing and to make really tough decisions to leave everything that at one point felt very comforting. Mm-hmm. So Jacob, I know that you are the author of The Divine Arsonist, mm-hmm. and you talk about a period of tremendous personal loss and transformation. Yeah. And have you had just a personal trauma that brought you to here? Because growing up, similar, rigid, fundamental, I was born and raised in a very religious background, and you better do this or else. but it took the death in order for me to have this awakening. Did something catapult you into the work you're doing now?
Yeah, you know, I'd say that a series of them, you know, I experienced quite a bit of trauma as a child and didn't understand even what that meant until, you know, just a few years ago when I really started to go into my own personal experience of healing from that and also then studying it and understanding it from a more medical and scientific standpoint. And I was delighted to find so much support for that. But at the time that this all happened, it was so interesting. It was about exactly 13 years ago, a young man came to work for me in this big, beautiful office that I had. And he was an interesting guy. And as you said a few minutes ago, you know, our vibe attracts those who are like us. And I just recognized him immediately. This is, in some way, this is a brother. He felt so familiar. So like family. And so we started working together. And a few months later, it would have been the summer of 2007. He said, "Hey, I would like to have you join me if you're willing to at this meditation retreat up in McCall, which is a couple of hours north of here in the mountains." And I, by the way, those who don't know, I live in Boise, Idaho. So it's a beautiful northwestern town. And so I said yes to that invitation. I had been away from the church I was raised in for about 10 years. I'd been reading Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and Marian Williamson. And those writers, those teachers had given me a sense that there was something more peaceful. There was a possibility of having a connection with the universe, with the divine, that did not include all the dogma and all the fear that I'd grown up with. And so I went along. I said, "Yes, I'll do this." But Angie, I also felt terrified. And I don't know why, because, you know, even then, this doesn't make any sense. Like, this is a meditation retreat. All these guys, Wayne Dyer and Megan, they all say meditation is super chill. You know, this is not going to be, shouldn't be scary.
Yeah, but Jacob, don't you know, we might go to hell.
Well, there was certainly that. And then when Luke came and picked me up, and Luke does appear in the first chapter there of The Divine Arsonist, he's a real person. And he came and picked me up, and you know, so I'm driving up there. I could just feel the pit of my stomach, this sense of, wow, I don't know what I'm getting into here. And when I got there, there was this beautiful cabin. We walked in and this guy with a beard opened the door and his beautiful wife came out and gave us all hugs and walked in. And there was a hanging of the Hindu god Ganesha on the wall. And there was incense in the air and people were tapping on hand drums. And oh man, I'm not in Kansas anymore. I'm really... really,
you're definitely not on the yellow brick road either.
Right, no, definitely out of my element. But I also felt like I was supposed to be there, and I felt, I didn't have this language for it then, but I felt very, very guided, and like I felt as if I were on a date with my soul's destiny in some way, and that felt both exciting because I had felt really lost for a long time, but it also felt terrifying. And so it turned out, Angie, that was going to be a shamanic retreat and they were going to be administering DMT, which is, you know, it occurs in our neurochemistry, from our pineal gland. So it comes into our body during the moments of birth and death. And so that's, you know, scientists have said that's partly what explains or at least supports the near-death experiences. Those, you know, what that chemical that floods our body. And of course, I don't feel like near-death experiences are just chemical events. But so we had this experience and I had never been high before. I don't think I'd been drunk before that. So this is my first experience of any kind of like adventure beyond the usual realms.
Nice.
And it was like getting kicked out of a fighter jet blindfolded. It was and again, I hadn't met people at that point who had near-death experiences, but later I've met many of them. And that experience was like very much like a near-death experience. And I got to experience the universe, or for lack of any better word, God, without any of the dogma, without any of the fear. And there was this sense, you know, and being raised religiously, there were scriptures, you know, in my mind. And I remember seeing it written on the sky at the high point of this experience: "There is no fear in love. There is no fear in love. And I remember just the experience of letting go of all the fear of my identity, of who I was, and began to then float back down into my body, Angie, and watched myself re-enter this form of a 34-year-old guy. But I could see on his face, he was really overweight, and his face was just like, it looked like a 55-year-old man's face, just really, really exhausted and stressed out and full of anxiety and pain. And I sort of somersaulted back in, and I could just feel tears running down the sides of my face into my ears and pooling up there as I opened my eyes and looked around at all these faces who were just holding space there. And I just knew from that moment that something had to change in my life, and that I had to somehow bring my physical Jacob life into alignment with what I had just experienced, which felt like very much a soul journey.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I know that's kind of tough, talking about strange substances and and let me ask you, so it was after that experience then, is that when you wrote Blessed Are the Weird?
Well, after the first one that came along was The Divine Arsonist, and that was really where I was seeking to talk about that.
Yes, and you did.
But what came after, and I was living in Austin, Texas by then. I had lost all my stuff, my house and my business and everything. And I was down there, you know, really seeking to reconnect with purpose. Like, okay, now what do I do? And I was driving down the road, Angie, and those words, blessed are the weird people, the poets and misfits and mystics, started to come into my mind in some way. And so I pulled over and literally dug under the seat and found, an old envelope and wrote that little piece on the back of an envelope.
Okay, so share that. You kind of breezed over that. Blessed are the weird. I want it coming from your face.
I'm finding it. I have the book here. It's funny. I wrote it and I've said it many times, and it somehow never sticks in my memory very well. I really don't feel like these are my words. I feel like I was given them, and so sharing them is sort of service.
Isn't it interesting? And I'm going to interject here because, Jacob, you bring up such a great point. And you get into writing, and we'll get into your Unboot Camp, which I absolutely think is amazing. For those of you who want to learn more about Jacob, go to jacobnordby.com. Jacob, I think you need to call yourself the Nordby Club. Not Nordies, Nordby Club. But this, and you all who listening, those of you who are having these profound experiences, don't judge the experience. Allow the experience, because that's where the most for me, and Jacob, I don't know if you agree with me or not, it doesn't come from us. It's so much greater than this physical being. And yet the amazing things that happen when we just allow, when we take our little envelopes or scribbly, just write them down. It's your soul speaking its truth.
Mm-hmm. You know, Angie, and I will read that little bit in a moment, but I just want to say, to support what you just said, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza says that we are experiencing about, I think it's 50 billion bits of information every second. And the conscious mind can only process about 40 to 50 of those, like consciously. Our brains can take in a couple thousand of those, but most of that's being handled by subconscious processes. So you might notice the sound of the car going outside and the temperature in the room and those kinds of things, those sensory bits. But the reason I'm sharing that is to say that we've been trained in our modern world to disregard what's called irrational or coming from some other place. But what's interesting, and when you take it, you know, like Dr. Joe says, you know, the way I would say it is, no matter how broad our minds might get or how intelligent we might be, we are only ever seeing reality through a keyhole. And there is all this other information happening outside of the keyhole. So every once in a while, information finds its way into the keyhole that doesn't seem to fit, but it doesn't mean it's not real.
Right.
More important.
And I'm so glad that you shared that. I love Joe Dispenza, by the way. And what I love that I've taken away from his teaching as well, and it goes along with grief. It also goes along with feeling your creative purpose and feeling those feelings of weird, is we got to start changing our mindset. When you get up in the morning and you do the same things over and over and over again and expect different results, that's not going to happen. So instead of getting up on the same side of the bed, instead of making your coffee, going to work, getting in your car, now, you know, masking up, is change just a few little things in your day to just change that dialogue. And that can be in your mind as well, don't you think, Jacob? It's not just physicality. It's also about the mental things that we're saying to ourselves. And so one of the quotes that I've created that I really, really do like is that, and I mentioned it at the beginning of the show a little bit, but it is, we cannot think our way out of grief. We have to imagine and create our way out of grief.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, grief is a feeling, and it's funny, I was putting the final edits on the new book today, The Creative Cure, and there's a phrase in there, we can't think our way out of a feeling, which really agrees with what you just said, Angie. I mean, the feeling starts in the body, and it's hooked to the thoughts, but we can't rationalize our way out. It actually has to be, you know, we're talking about soul work here, feelings, yeah. Especially the big intense ones like grief and like, you know, all these things, these require a lot of gentleness, and we can't just like apply the rational process and be done with them.
Oh, I love that. I'd like to stay on this topic for just a couple minutes on the feeling.
Yeah.
Because that's such key. I remember growing up and just remember hearing, oh, if you expect me to be touchy-feely, in my audiences, Jacob, when I talk about feeling, I had this one woman who probably grew up in the same kind of, you know, religious background as we did, but she just raised her little meek hand and she said, Angie, how do you start to feel when you've never felt before?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And so I tell people, I challenge each one of you that you're listening, in order to connect with any of the divine, in order to connect with any of the spirituality or that whole other creative part of you, it comes from the feeling that Jacob is talking about. Mm-hmm. And it comes from even as simple as, don't eat just because it's 6 o'clock at night and you better eat everything on your plate. Listen to the sound of your stomach. Listen to the little growl. That is a feeling of your root, just of hunger. Satisfy the hunger, not because you have to sit down at a certain time, because it's, you were taught and you were programmed in your mind for sometimes 18 years, some of us. Listen to your body and it tells you the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read from Jacob's book, page 89. Jacob writes, most weird people I know are only truly afraid when they start to get numb. Our depth of feeling, our ability to sense things and constantly process them, is our most valuable currency in this world. Even if it isn't always easy to turn it into cash in the bank, but somehow we know that if we stamp, stuff, or dampen all these often uncomfortable sensations, we will have lost what makes us real. I love that, Jacob.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's interesting. Since then, I released that book, 4 years ago. Yeah, it's just been such an interesting journey for me, Angie, to continue going into, what is this creative thing? What does this mean? And the more I've gone into it, the more I've found that many of us, as you were just saying, we're taught to turn off our sensations, and those sensations, I'm talking about our feelings, our emotions, intuition, those are all signals from the inner self and what I've come to call the inner creative self. And they're trying to tell us things, but most of us were taught, mostly by well-meaning people too. You know, folks were just trying to get us socialized so we could become productive members of society. So it's not this necessarily such a sinister thing or even malicious at all, but they were taught the same way. And so we then come into adulthood and, you know, again, most of us from early childhood or birth, we come into adulthood very much separated from the messages that are coming from our inner self, and certainly separated from being able to trust anything that's coming in, information that's coming in from the universe around us.
So Jacob, in order to start trusting, when you put together your unboot camp, your unboot camps, do you start like walk us through that a little bit, a day in the life of an unboot camp. If my listeners want to join you, I know right now, not a live event, but you do have your online events, is what will they learn? Will they start unlearning to ravel some of that programming so that their creative selves can come through? And you know what? Hold that thought, you guys. We have, I don't even know how long has this been on here, Zach? My Zach producer is absolutely amazing, and I'm so glad I have him back. Thanks, Zach. We have about 2 minutes. And so, Jacob, I'd like, before we get into this and your unboot camp and teaching people how to find their creative inner self, where can people find you, and maybe tell us a little bit what projects you've got going on just until break, and then we'll come back.
Yeah. Well, you said it before. It's probably the easiest way is jacobnordby.com. Nordby, everyone misses the D, it seems. Yeah. And there's a free gift on there. It's the creative self journaling. They can just download that with name and email. And yeah, I guess we have about a minute left. So the project's coming up. I guess I'm most excited about the Gathering of Creatives. It's coming up in December with Julia Cameron and Sark and some other wonderful folks. And
also in Santa Fe!
This is online because we can't do it there.
Isn't this next year? Isn't 2021?
Yeah, no, this is the one coming up in December.
Oh.
Yeah, we just announced it. Yeah.
Keep going. I'm sorry. I totally interrupted you. I was so excited you were going to be that close.
Yeah. Well, we're really hoping that happens in Santa Fe. And then the next one, of course, is the book, The Creative Cure, coming out in February. And Julia Cameron is actually reading the manuscript now to write the foreword. So I just feel so grateful for that.
Love that. I love it. When we come back, more with Jacob Nordby, beautiful writer, unboot camp lecturer, and trying and working to get us to find and free our inner artists within. When we come back.
Listen up. The wealth you receive is a result of your personal relationship with the soul of money, meaning your spiritual well-being affects your ability to create abundance. Jennifer Bloom works with people to mend the spiritual disconnects that block up the cash flow. How's your relationship with yourself? Are you in balance with the divine? I know, these are big questions, but there are answers. Take Jennifer's free money relationship quiz to learn where you need to focus your energy and watch yourself grow into the abundance you deserve. Trust the divine. Learn to receive. You are worthy of all the wealth you seek. Visit jenniferbloom.com and click on the purple banner to take the free money relationship quiz. That's Jennifer Bloom, BLOOME.com.
TalkRadio.com.
Welcome back, my beautiful listeners. On the show today, I've got beautiful author, coach, mentor, the beautiful Jacob Nordby. He is the author of three books, two of which are published, one, The Divine Arsonist, and Blessed Are the Weird, a manifesto for creatives, and his third book coming out, The Creative Cure, which kind of, Jacob, it encompasses everything and brings it, like I tell people, you can't put your toe in the same river, because mm-hmm. the river's always changing. So what you've learned through all of this, what can you tell my listeners who are stuck, who are having experiences, and I'm not talking about just death and the beyond. I'm talking about that inner guidance, that not the GPS, but the PGS, the personal guidance system, that nudge, that spark, that divine energy, or Christ energy, as James von Prague told me to use. How do you get people to move beyond their fears? Because there are days I want to crawl up in the fetal position. The first part of your website, you have my most favorite Amazon review. I would crawl up, and that would have kept me in hiding for like 3 weeks.
What does that review say? I remember it made me laugh. That's all I remember about it.
Oh my gosh. Let me see. Let me tell you what it said. You guys, okay. And so when we're talking weird, it's a knowing of weird. It's not like this guy who comes on and says, the author has a bad case of himself. If you're weird, it's okay. There, I've saved you money. Jacob, that would have floored me. It's why I don't like social media. I don't want people behind the screens, you know, behind their computers being able to judge my journey. I think that's what I felt safe in biotech for 20 some years, because I had a structure. Mm-hmm. I knew when I was doing really well, and I knew when I was doing really bad. Mm-hmm. But so to put our own life out there, to put our own souls out there on the line to be judged and ridiculed, mm-hmm. and chastised, and I share with people all of the time, I was born, there is the family that I was born into, and there is the family that I create. But I had to lose everything, Jacob, which after you shared, you know, The Divine Arsonist and your experience, is it possible to come out of this without having to go through some sort of trauma?
You know, I've asked that myself a lot. And my brother, who was my business partner back in those days, you know, we were best friends as little kids. And then he watched me go into this, what for him was a very mysterious time of my life. And he just told me, he said, Jake, I have followed you all my life. And he said, I can't go there with you now. I don't know where you're going or who you're going to be. And it was interesting. This last year, he came into his own experience of awakening to who he really is and is, you know, having these amazing adventures now in meditation. And he's taken Dr. Joe Dispenza's courses, and, you know, he's having all these big breakthroughs. And what's interesting is we had this conversation the other day, and I said, Nate, I'm really having a hard time even knowing who you are, because I really never expected to be able to talk with you about these things. And he laughed and said, I know. He's like, but he said, you know, I had to come to this my own way. And Angie, he didn't have some major trauma or someone die, or, you know, he just began to awaken. And here I think is the key. He began to awaken and know that there has to be more. He just knew that his life was feeling too, well, you used the word stuck earlier. Yeah. It was feeling too cramped. He was noticing that he was bumping against invisible walls, that he's like, I want what's on the other side of that. And I can't seem to get there. I can't seem to be as open and loving with my children as I really want. And I know that I'm damaging my relationship with them, and I'm leaving them with beliefs about life and about themselves that I know I don't want to pass on. And so it began, you know, and he said, with my wife, and today is actually, I think, their 17th wedding anniversary this very day. And they came through a bit of a crisis a few years ago where, which really helped, I think, to put him on his journey of saying, okay, I know there's more. I know there's more for me. And I was talking with him the other day and I said, Nate, I'm so grateful that you didn't have to lose all your money or your, you know, your businesses and all these things. I'm just so grateful that you got to be led into it exactly the way you needed to. And so I guess that's a really long way of answering your question. Say, I feel like change is likely to be painful no matter what kind of change it is. And the bigger the change, you know, the more difficult that can be to our minds, because we love certainty. We love the familiar. But I don't feel like it has to be some horrible, horrible trauma, or that everyone who wakes up or begins to wake up has to go through the same exact path, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yes, it absolutely does. And oh my gosh, congratulations to Nate. And I can't, their 17th wedding anniversary. This is another clue to my listeners as well. 17 is a number, just random for most. But it's been very, very instrumental in, oh my gosh, you see it and you know you're going in the right direction, one of those kind of things. And if those of you who follow me know how imperative 17, and so that's so amazing, Jacob, of any year they could have been married or how long they've been married, 17. So I am so, and he's so, I'm so grateful that he has you there to kind of bounce ideas off of. I mean, has he come back into the realm of your tribe a little bit?
Oh, we're closer now than I think we ever were. And it feels so good to know that it's even possible, because it just felt like, well, I felt when I went on my own way, took my then wife and three little kids and moved to Austin, Texas, and we didn't have a job. It didn't have, you know, it's like, okay, now we're just trusting intuition. In fact, I just moved into a new home and was packing up some things and found a notebook, Angie, and I found the very sheet of paper that my then wife and I sat in a fast food restaurant on South Congress in Austin. And we were sitting there trying to get a sense of, you know, is this move something we should make? And I drew a rough outline of the United States and just drew it into quadrants and began making little scribbles in the different quadrants. And it was just funny looking back at that, realizing, oh, look how guided I was. Look how guided I was. And able to go to a place where no one knew me, and I didn't have to keep a persona or a reputation together. And I got to really, for the first time in my life, you know, I'm an oldest kid, and everyone had always looked at me as the A student and the one who did the right thing. And, you know, moms always wanted their little boys to play with me because I was the good kid. And so for the first time in my life, I got to not carry that around. I got to find out who I was outside of all of those other, well, you read that quote when we started, you know, the invisible bricks of other people's opinions. I just got, that felt like freedom for the first time.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And so, and I'm going to stop here, and this is going to be a plug for Jacob. Well, the whole show is kind of, but one, I am so honored that you're here with me. But second is that it is so refreshing to talk to somebody who is authentic and honest and makes no apologies for their life. And one of the themes that have run through all of your books, Jacob, is how being authentic is almost a catalyst in itself. Once we become true to ourselves, we are able to accept and receive as well truth. And just to give you all an idea of kind of the writing, I consider you different than an author. I consider you a poet. And Jacob, you tug at strings. You don't even just tug, you like flip and freaking rip them out and make us look deep within ourselves. And the next, what I want to talk to you about next is, we've talked about the feeling and we've talked about a little bit empathy or the sensitivity I want to get into. Here is, I love this. Let me tell you something. Live your truth right out in the open. No hiding or apologizing for who you are. What do you have to lose? The good opinion of others? Believe me, they have no idea how to do life. And if they are looking at you at all, when you're busy living your truth, it is probably with a mixture of curiosity and admiration for the boldness they can't muster. I love that. I mean, I highlighted the whole freaking book. So Jacob, taking Blessed and moving into the creative cure, tell readers what they can expect if they go to Amazon or go to your website. I think they can order it right from your website, correct? It brings them to Amazon and to pre-order. Mm-hmm. So talk to us, what will people get from reading The Creative Cure?
Well, it's interesting that you just read that bit, Angie. I find what's happened in me since Blessed Are the Weird and moving into Creative Cure, I've had a gentleness happen toward myself and toward other people. And I know that some people would read a bold, and by the way, I don't apologize or regret writing those things, but I've also noticed that there's this, I've had a lot of people come and say, okay, is it possible for me to have a creative restoration in my life without becoming so bold and out there, without becoming this like great big personality and all of that. And, you know, I feel so strongly that, in fact, one of the key principles in The Creative Cure is that creative success and what we might call success in life, I feel like we as a culture have separated those. And in fact, it's only the people who have 100,000 followers on Instagram or whatever, get on a certain podcast or making millions of dollars that we view as successful. And I just want to say that my heart and what I seek to share in The Creative Cure is to say, it doesn't require this great big grand expression. It requires really healing the connection to the creative self, the inner self. And how that then gets expressed can be as quiet as an oak tree growing out there on the hillside. It doesn't have to be some great big fiery expression. And in fact, it needs to be exactly coming from the inner self, because I feel like success now, and I really want to invite more of the world to come into this. It means becoming more of who you really are, not who that person you see on Instagram or TV or whatever, you know, their expression of themselves. No, real success for any of us is just finding out and becoming who we really are. And so I really share a process of self-discovery and deep self-acceptance. And to me, those two things connect and create, they create the environment where transformation happens. And transformation is just becoming who you really are.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And you can see how you've evolved throughout this process. And I think instead of looking at this, like you had said, and maybe I should have just left out that last sentence, because I think what I was trying to get at unsuccessfully is not hiding or apologizing for who we are. And I know as a creative and in the work that I do, that there's a lot of pushback. You know, you don't understand, it's because I'm not talking about grief. And I think an initial response for most people who are creatives, but who have had trauma or were damaged as children, Jacob, is to defend. And that's a tough place. And it's taken years to get to this place of not feeling I have to defend. But I do know there are a lot of creative people out there. And Eckhart Tolle had one person at his first event. I've had events. Aren't you afraid nobody's going to come? Jacob, so it's going from that not caring and not being not that bold, not caring. It's if I can help one person, that is all I feel I've been called to do. And that one person becomes 2 and 10. And that's how we grow a vibration of just love, compassion, and understanding. And so I so appreciate that what you had said about the deep self-connectedness, because I know right now there are so many people who sit and you are watching Facebook. All these people are having amazing times. Jacob, you watch all the people, even the Joe Dispenzas, their YouTube videos. Everything is so polished and perfect. Mm-hmm. What do you say to those who are looking at that going, oh my God, what I have to say is nothing. It's, you know what I mean? And it is, it's taken me, like our stories, you can have one story, I can have another. And we could have the same creative, and we're kind of on the same page here, the feeling, the empathy, the energy, the true light, true self. But our stories will never be the same. Talk to that a little bit. I would love it, because there are so many who are afraid to share their gifts because they're comparing themselves with other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And that's, oh, yeah. Wow. We really have stepped into a deep well here, and a good one. in the creative curate, you know, there's three enemies of creativity, and they are, socialization and rejection, and then traumatic experiences. And those are, they're really all so intertwined with each other. It's usually hard to separate them. And you know, what I would love to say, Angie, is starting somewhere. As you just said, you know, you look at Dr. Joe Dispenza or someone else, we're looking at people's highlight reels. We're looking at what they've developed over the course of decades in some cases. And now they have, you know, they've developed support. They have a team. They have all this stuff. And people look on and they go, I'll never get there. And so I can't start. And the fact is, maybe they go, if that's what it looks like to become, you know, successful or to come all the way into myself, then I don't even want that. And right. I just want to say that whatever your true self, however it wants to express, there will be times when it requires stretching or stepping out into the unknown and, you know, experiencing awkwardness and fear and things like that. But it's not going to be a mismatch for you, for who you really are. So, right. You know, and for people who say, well, how do I get to a point where, you know, it doesn't just feel so just, you know, messy or whatever. I just really want to say that, again, tuning into your true inner self and learning to let it come out and feel safe enough to come out. I've found, for example, I have in the Creative Unboot Camp, you asked about that earlier, and it's a little hard for me to tell you what a day in the life of that looks like because it changes from year to year. But many, many people, you know, when I invite people to share from what they're discovering or perhaps write a poem or something, I've had people send me private notes saying, I don't feel safe at all sharing anything that I'm doing with other people right now. And, you know, the reason I call it unboot camp is because I'm not there to force people, like, you know, just ignore your feelings and just come on out here and do it. It's like, no, that's not what this is about. What it's about is listening to your inner self. And so I'll often encourage people rather than say, no, you have to come out, you have to share. Which I believe that our social media culture has actually it's made people feel like they have to share things they're not ready to, parts of their story, parts of their grief, parts of their traumatic story that they're maybe not ready to share. And they see all these examples of people doing it so boldly and they say, well, what's wrong with me? I just better go do that, whether they're ready or not. And sometimes that can actually re-traumatize people. So what I encourage people to do is create a safe place for themselves. And one client, one woman who was part of the group and then became a client later, the only way she could feel safe, Angie, to begin looking back into her life and begin touching some of the things in her journal and in her processing was to actually go inside the closet with a flashlight and shut the door. So she was actually in an enclosed space to where she could begin to unearth some of those things. And that began the process. Wow. And she'd been to therapists, she'd been to all these different things. And of course, I highly recommend professional therapy. So this is not a replacement for that. But it was so interesting just to be with her, intuitively guided to say, how can you find a place to make yourself safe? To where you can let these things come out and that they won't feel like they're going to destroy you or anyone around you. And so symbolically, that was important to actually enclose herself in space, for example. So
So you honor where people are, which sounds really, really amazing. And I read the Unboot Camp as when I saw that title, Unboot Camp. It was, I perceived it, and this goes back to, you know, everything is a perception. So the way I view something is going to be totally different than the way you view it. And we could be looking at the exact same thing. I looked at it, Jacob, as a deprogramming of who we were and who we want to become. But I love that. And I love the woman who is bold enough to sit in the closet with a flashlight.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Angie, and you referred to this earlier, but our bodies hold so much wisdom and we're so taught to not pay attention to it. Yes. And so learning to tune back in to the wisdom of the body that says, I feel safe right now, or I don't feel safe right now. And that's part of learning to tune into intuition and to right brain information. And, you know, the free journal gift on my website is a process that's so simple. It's about 10 minutes a day and it asks three questions. How do I feel right now? What do I need right now? And then the third question is, what would I love? And I've found that developed from my own practice of going through the process of healing traumatic experiences. And I found, Angie, that when I would begin to ask those questions, how do I feel right now? Well, It's first thing in the morning. I feel tired. And to be honest, I feel kind of grouchy and depressed. And I don't know how this day is going to go. It's not about writing down this lovely picture or being dishonest, because it's so private. And then what do I need? A lot of times I would find out that if I were honest on the page, I need to get up and pee right now. Or I'm so tired. I just need a nap. And I feel guilty because it's only 10 o'clock in the morning. And so, you know, I found that as I began to pay attention to those small signals, something began to change. I began to feel more free. I began to feel more solid in myself. And I think, well, I don't even just think anymore. My experience is that by doing that sort of thing on a regular basis, and it's an accrual effect, because at first it feels weird and awkward, but over time, I feel like that the inner parts who have not ever felt safe or that they felt rejected or abandoned, they begin to understand. It's kind of like rebuilding a friendship with someone, you know, we've been estranged from, or maybe building a friendship with an animal in nature. There's this process of proving that we're going to pay attention, we're gonna be safe. Yes. And then the inner self begins to come out a little bit more at a time.
Oh, I love that. And oh my gosh, that is, where do I start? When, and listeners, my beautiful listeners, that feeling of what you should do and what you want to do. And Jacob, I think that's kind of what you're talking about a little bit. So many of us, oh my gosh, I have to get up at 7. I've got to drink my coffee. I've got to get in the car. I've got to go to the grocery store. Instead, like you said, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have to get up to pee at 10. Oh my gosh, I shouldn't have to. It's going from a should and must to a could and want. And I learned that from Lance Adams, who is a great, 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 great therapist who delves in autism, things like that, in counseling. And I just love that. It's, why do you feel like you have to do something? And a lot of us, we're as recovering people pleasers, we do not receive graciously. We don't even receive words from ourselves, our true inner selves, freely, because we question it and wonder if there's something wrong with us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you just said such a key.
Hang on. Sorry, guys. I have to take my L-glutamine. Anyways. You're just going to say something down and my alarm goes off. Sorry, guys.
No, it's a signal. You need to, you know, it's good. You'll pay attention to it.
I got to pee.
Right. Well, no, I mean, you know, that's the other thing is, I think that it's going through these processes of healing, of coming into our own. Sometimes it can feel so, you know, like it just needs to be, if I can just get away from the regular world. And it's like, no, this process, you know, we have little kids, we have obligations, we have all these things. So we have to find a way to honor and begin to listen to the self along with the things that happen, like the alarm that rings that says, go take, you know, your medicines or whatever, you know, but I really want to share this part.
Okay.
Because I love, of course, you know, support from people buying a book or coming to a course or something like that. But that's not really why I come on a show like yours, Angie. It's because I want to share the truth that you are enough, that who you really are, your inner self holds all the answers. It holds direction to bring you into your healing. It holds direction to bring you into your highest joy as yourself in this lifetime. And so if there's one thing I could leave you with today, it's that really, if you can just begin to tune into and trust your inner self, you have everything you need in there to bring you into what you really desire.
Wonderful. And what a beautiful way to end our show today, Jacob. I am honored. I am privileged that you chose to come on the program, share your thoughts and ideas, your true self with my audience today. And I hope you want to come back and we can delve into The Creative Cure when it comes out and I can read it.
That would be wonderful. I'll make sure you get a copy, Angie.
Please. I love it. Jacob, thank you so much, everyone. JacobNordby.com. And that's NORDBY, Nordby, not Nordstrom's, Nordy's, Nordby. Thank you all. Jacob, thank you.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure and really an honor to be here. Thanks, Angie.
Thank you. And you all continue to be healthy and safe in love and light until next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, Redefining Death and Loss. Tune in every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Angie shares through choice, present moment awareness, and a willingness to keep an open mind that anything is possible, even in death. For more information or to listen to past shows, visit BeyondProof.com. That's BeyondProof.com. See you next time.